I'm realizing I've already finished that cup of coffee. I should have refilled before we started.
Pause break
Coffee
before we
break.
start.
No. I've got like two sips left. I'm gonna make them count.
Oh, better you than me.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Rolling Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
I'm a pediatrician.
I'm a psychiatrist.
I never know what to say here. We're both part-time clinicians, part-time researchers.
I'm a full-time mom.
Soon to be dog mom?
Yes, there's a dog coming, as we've mentioned, so we're excitedly waiting for that.
There was a delay. Delay in the dog.
Delay. It happens. It happens. And we started this podcast as a way of trying to navigate some of the noise going around about children's health right now.
This week,
we are going to do our holiday edition. It's a topic that comes up every holiday.
Why did they get more?
Why did they get more? So picture this. It's the day after a major holiday. You're going through the living room and stepping on those tiny Legos that your kids just left out. You know, there's wrapping paper like in the dog bowl. You don't know why. And then your kid looks at you and says, "Why did they get more presents than I did?"
Oof. Instant stomach drop.
Exactly. And right away, you know, I just think, because capitalism, structural inequality, different credit card limits. But all that comes out is every family's different.
So today on Rolling Forward, we're talking about those moments when kids notice that some families give or get more, and they start asking questions about fairness, money, and why the world doesn't always match.
So we're going to walk through, first, what kids actually understand about fairness at different ages. Because it's really different when you're comparing a 2-year-old versus a 12-year-old. Second, we're going to talk about why these differences in gifts can trigger such big feelings. Then we're going to cover what to say in the moment when your child says, "Hey, that's not fair." And we'll close with some ideas on how to coach kids who are on the other side. Maybe your family is getting a lot this year and you want your kids to learn to be kind and grateful without feeling guilty about it.
So let's get started.
Let's start with the science.
Kids are obsessed with fairness, and that's developmentally normal.
Research in developmental psychology shows that by about 3 years old, kids already understand some basic principles of fairness, like equality and taking turns, even if they don't always act on them when their own goods are on the line.
There's a great line of studies where researchers show simple stories or puppet plays about sharing. Even 3 to 4-year-olds will say things like, "They should share the cookies," or "They should get the same number of stickers." So the idea of fairness shows up early.
But as the mom of a 2-year-old, I can tell you the behavior lags behind. So although kids say things like "they should share the cookies," when it's their turn to share the cookie, fair often means I get more. So there's a gap at this age between what kids know is fair and what they do. And it's important to note that that is a normal part of development.
By about elementary school, kids start to add in a little bit more nuance. They start to say things like, "They work harder, so they should get more." "She's younger, so she might need more help." They're moving from same to sometimes different is fair, which is getting closer to the idea of equity, that matching resources to needs or efforts.
And after that, by around age 8 or 10, many kids understand that different families have different rules, budgets, or traditions, even if they're still disappointed.
But here's the twist. Some research suggests that kids care not just about the same stuff, but about equal respect, whether the way things are shared feels respectful to everyone involved.
So when a child sees their cousin get way more of something, they're not just counting objects. They're also asking themselves, what does this mean about me? Am I less important?
Oof. Meanwhile, we live in a country where roughly 1 in 7 kids are living in poverty, depending on which measure you use. and about 1 in 5 households with kids experienced food insecurity in 2023.
And if your family is in this position, where you're struggling with money, food, housing this season, it's important to know that you are not alone. Please talk to your pediatrician, your social worker, maybe a local community organization. There are more supports out there than it can feel like when you're up worrying about your family this holiday. And while kids may not know those numbers, they can absolutely see the impact. Who has a big tree full of gifts? Who doesn't? Whose parents are stressed? And whose parents are working 3 jobs?
So when your child asks, why did they get more? That's not them being spoiled. That's their developing fairness radar doing its job.
And sometimes that can lead to meltdowns. We all know the meltdowns.
In a household with a toddler, you are very familiar with the meltdowns.
So let's talk about what is happening under the hood when a kid melts down about gifts.
From a brain perspective, the amygdala, which we've talked about before, it's the part of the brain that detects threats.
Alarm! 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 That's the amygdala.
The amygdala lights up when kids feel left out, less than, or rejected.
And that's true about the amygdala. It lights up not just for physical threats, but also social threats. So when they have those feelings of rejection, the amygdala starts lighting up.
So my cousin got a gaming system and I didn't. Isn't just a thought. It can feel like I don't belong. Something is wrong with me. Something is wrong with my family.
And that's where shame really sneaks in. Shame is tricky, tricky.
Neuroscience work on shame and threat shows that shame activates these same responses, the same amygdala, stress hormones, fight or flight. And so your child's nervous system might be going, I'm bad, we're bad, everyone can see it.
And that's when they can get flooded. The tears, the anger, the meltdown, this is the worst Christmas ever, storming to their room.
I hate you, Tati.
I hate you. It's important to remember in these moments that younger kids, especially those who are under 7, they don't yet have a fully online prefrontal cortex, that top-down control of their brain that helps with executive function and planning, which means they can't really talk themselves down yet. So that thinking brain that might say, okay, we're disappointed, but it's okay, that's going to take a lot more time to activate in younger kids especially.
So your job as a parent isn't to shut down that emotion. It's to be a borrowed prefrontal cortex that they haven't yet developed. That calm, regulating presence that says, you are safe, you are loved, and we can talk about this.
And if we respond with our shame, and if you've ever been in public when your kid is having a meltdown and you feel shame, that is totally normal. But if we respond with our shame by saying things to kids like, you're being ungrateful, don't you know how lucky you are? That actually just piles more threat on top of their already overactivated system. And although we might mean that in a reflective way, it really shuts down their learning.
Exactly. Shame doesn't teach values. It really teaches kids to hide their emotions.
And so while it's perfectly normal for us to feel that way and want to respond that way, by being that calm, regulating presence, it's going to help your child reset their nervous system and then move forward into the conversation that needs to happen.
Okay, Stephanie, let's get practical. What do you actually say when your child comes to you and says, it's not fair, they got more than I did?
Let's start by breaking this down into rough age groups, because again, this is going to be really different between a child who's 2 versus one who's 12. But remember, development isn't exact, so you know your kid best and where they are. For the little kids, you know, the kids that are 2, 3, 4, 5, the main goals here are to name the feeling, normalize it, and give a simple story about difference. So this is not when you need a TED Talk on capitalism to your 3-year-old. You really just need a connection and a simple explanation. So maybe something like, you're feeling sad and maybe a little mad because you saw your cousin get a really big toy. It's okay to feel that way. Different families do holidays in different ways. And in our family, we chose these gifts for you because we thought you would love them.
You can also gently redirect towards what they do have and what they enjoyed. What was your favorite part of today? Was it the Lego set or when we all play that game together? This isn't toxic positivity. It's helping their brain find more than one story, not just, I lost.
For kids who are a little older, those who are between the ages of maybe 7 and 10, this is a time that you can add a little more honesty and introduce the idea of inequality and values.
You can try something like, you notice that your friend got a lot more gifts. That's a really sharp observation. The truth is, families have different amounts of money and different traditions. Some like to buy a lot of big gifts. Some like smaller things. Some focus more on experiences. In our family, we try to fill in the blank. Not go into debt. Focus on time together. It's okay to feel disappointed and still be proud of how our family does things.
You might also name the larger reality, especially if your family is one of many families that is going through a hard time right now. So you might try something like, you're right, we can't buy as many things as some families, and that is not because of you. A lot of families are having a really hard time right now, and we are doing our best to take care of what we need and try to have some fun. You don't need to dump every detail on your kids, but a little context can reduce that, what's wrong with me, feeling that they might be having.
By middle school and up, many kids can start really understanding inequality, but they're still prone to social comparison and that everyone else has more than me.
This is a time where we want to start naming inequality, but without dumping adult-sized guilt on them. And this is especially true when kids might have social media feeds that are full of things that other kids are counting and displaying. Even though when you look at the research, older kids and teens actually get more happiness from experiences and shared time than from physical stuff. But there's still this pressure to give and to get.
With tweens and teens, you can be more direct. You're right. There's a big difference in what families can afford. It's not about who deserves more. It's about circumstances. Job, rent, medical bills, where people live. It's totally normal to feel jealous or left out sometimes. I also want to hear what you value. When you imagine a really good holiday, what matters most to you?
That's a really great way of putting it, Alicia, because this really gives them a sense of voice and agency instead of just, this is how it is. You should be grateful. And let's take a moment just to flip it a moment. Perhaps your family is in a position where your child is the one getting more this year, maybe from their grandparents or extended family, or because you're in a different financial place than other people around you.
You might worry that your kid will brag or make someone else feel small at school.
And the science here is actually kind of encouraging. Kids pick up what we model about money and happiness, and they also respond really well to gratitude practices. There are so many studies that show that even simple gratitude exercises lead to small but real boost in well-being and pro-social behavior in kids and teens.
If you want to learn more about that, you can listen to our Thanksgiving episode all about gratitude.
Because we love gratitude. We love it. We love it. So a concrete coaching might sound like, you got some really special gifts this year. That's exciting. And it's also something that not everyone gets. How do you think it would feel for someone who didn't get as much to hear about your gifts?
And you can follow that up with, we're not going to brag or list everything we got. If someone asks, you can share a favorite gift and maybe a favorite moment, like baking cookies with grandma. So it's not all about the stuff.
And in doing that, you're basically teaching three important social emotional skills. First, perspective taking. Imagine how someone else feels. Second, gratitude. Note and appreciate what you have. And third, boundaries. You don't owe everyone a full inventory of your life.
And you can turn that into a quick ritual. What are three things you're grateful for today? And one way we could help someone else feel good this week. Those tiny practices are exactly what gratitude research is talking about. Small, consistent actions that improve mood and generosity over time.
And it's important in doing this not to make your kids feel guilty for what they've been given. They're not the ones who designed the system. So you can acknowledge inequality while still letting them enjoy their gifts. Something like, it's okay to feel happy about what you got. And it's also important to remember that not everyone has the same. We can hold both joy and care for others.
So before Christmas, before the holidays, before holiday parties, it's important to set expectations with your kids.
because a lot of conflict comes from unspoken expectations. Kids might imagine a mountain of gifts because that's what they saw on YouTube, and then reality is different. So it's important to have a pregame conversation before a major celebration like a holiday.
For younger kids, that'll be something like, this year, you'll be getting a few presents that we picked out very carefully for you. Some families give a lot of small presents, some give one really big one, and we're doing it this way because it's best for our family.
For older kids, one way you might set expectations is say, we have a budget this year. Here's the range we can work with. We're going to focus on things you'll really use and maybe an experience we can share together.
You can even name your family policy. We don't go into debt for gifts. We always do at least one act of giving. We focus on time together.
Kids remember those scripts and they become a part of their inner voice about money and worth. I remember that our family growing up always volunteered together around the holidays, and that is a tradition that we have continued as adults. We volunteer together in our neighborhood as a family around the holidays.
They also set the expectation that everyone was getting one gift for Christmas.
And that's how it was every year. And that's what worked for our family. And although my parents had not heard this podcast episode a few decades ago when I was growing up, there's a lot from this that they did, which was setting the expectation of what it was and making it about our family's values and what worked for us, not about money.
And something else that we would do is that we would pick out a toy every year for toy drive.
And that's a way that you can give your children agency and generosity. So you can let them pick out a toy for a donation drive. Maybe they can make cards or small gifts for neighbors. Or ask them, if we could help one person feel cared for this season, who would you choose?
The research is just overwhelming in this area. It shows that contributing to others, having a sense of purpose and helping is linked to better mental health and resilience in adolescents and young adults. And it's good to plant those seeds early.
So to wrap this up and get on with our holidays, the point here is that when kids say, why did they get more? That isn't a sign that they have no gratitude. It's a sign that their fairness radar is working. Their nervous system might be entering threat mode. And it's a chance to teach them about feelings, family values, and inequality in a way that doesn't shame them.
You don't have to give a lecture on economic analysis. A few well-chosen moves can go a long way. One, name the feeling. Two, tell a simple truth about different families and different resources. Three, recenter your family's values. It's about connection, not competition. And four, when your kids are the ones with more, teach quiet gratitude and gentle sharing, not guilt.
And that's how we can raise kids who see inequality clearly without feeling like their worth depends on what's inside that wrapped box under the tree.
And that's our episode for today.
Thanks for tuning in. We are the Rollin' Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rollin.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rollin. Leave us a 5-star review. Share this episode with a friend. Maybe you're talking about inequality and how hard it is to navigate that this holiday season.
Send us an email at rollinforwardshow. That's R-O-L-I-N forwardshow@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you. And happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Science.
And done.